It's time for JT the Brick on Fox Sports Vegas.
As we try to expand the eardrums and the minds of sports talk radio fans in Vegas.
Sound off like you got a pair.
I have a radio dream that someday we will build an evening drive radio show that is sports-based, fast-paced, with interactive callers, and we're talking about professional team after professional team, and the image of Las Vegas as an elite sports town.
Because I am hard, you will not like me. But the more you hate me, the more you will learn.
Trying to do it, and I know it sounds a little bit preachy, but there's no other way to do it.
You will not laugh. You will not cry. You will learn by the numbers. I will teach you.
How about that? Everybody on board with that?
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, hour number two of the show. Getting used to that. We kicked it off last Friday. We're doing it now. Thrilled about it. Thanks to the Vegas Golden Knights for this opportunity to do 2 hours of radio every day. Evening drive in Vegas. Wow, what a dream come true. Evening drive in Vegas with Elvis, Sinatra. I was on Dean Martin today. Dean Martin, is that Dean Martin Drive, I believe? Went and toured the Raiders Stadium. I have the pictures up at JT the Brick on Twitter and on Facebook. Go to the Facebook page at JT the Brick. That's where we're able to go back and forth and debate, and you can put a comment in there on what you see. I took some cool video and was out there with my friend Tom Blando, who's the point guy for the Raiders. What a remarkable job he has in regards to what he does every day, walking that property and seeing the amount of construction workers that come on that site daily and do everything from stretching to get loose to go work. I was on the second deck. They're building out the third deck, seeing where the torch will be, the new Al Davis torch, which is going to be incredible, the open lanai area where the windows open up, the suites. And we're just walking the concourses there. There's nothing there yet. They haven't built out the suites. They're starting to do all of that. But the sight lines are incredible. And the stadium is open, as you know, because they haven't done the wrap yet of it or put the roof on it, so you could see from one side to the other. And I'm telling you, when I was at the highest point that I was at earlier today on the construction site, looking down at the 15 freeway, I felt like I could reach over and touch the Delano and Mandalay Bay. The fact that this stadium, everybody, is literally on the strip, right off the strip, is going to be incredible. We're talking about the foot traffic and people who are going to be walking over from the casinos, the parking, all the issues surrounding it, how they're going to grow the grass outside the stadium. And then they have this remarkable, huge tray that will be able to be rolled into on game day for natural grass. Mark Davis wanted to have a certain look for the stadium, a sleekness to it. From the outside, that kind of looks like a car and has this kind of cool look. The roof had to be specific to what Mark Davis's vision was of the Raiders going forward. And one thing I could tell you after being down there today, it's really important for the Raiders to have their brand be exactly what the stadium looks like. Where we had a conversation today about the Niners stadium, Levi Stadium. I've been there once. Levi Stadium, they built terribly. It's beautiful. They've had the national championship games. They've had big events up there, but the problem is they didn't build it right. They built it in the middle of nowhere where no one wants to go. The Niners used to play in San Francisco. In San Francisco. They don't play in San Francisco anymore. And they're way outside of San Francisco. And the stadium, they just built it straight up, and they have one section that's completely in the sun, so the fans won't sit in their seats in the sun because they didn't think through it. It's not going to look anything like we have. Our stadium's going to be much better. Now, it's not going to be as big as Jerry's World in Dallas or as big as what the Rams are doing in L.A., but it's going to be much cooler. It's going to have cooler sight lines. It's going to have the open lanai window looking back at the strip. The video scoreboard's going to be incredible. And it's just, I was proud to walk that property today with people who work for the Raiders. They care about that, and they want it to be perfect. And they're going to come in on budget, and they're going to come in on time. And great to see it. The thing that blew me away the most today was how clean the construction site was, because you had to have security let us on the site. Right? You have to have security for a number of reasons. And then when we started walking around, there was not a wrapper, garbage, water bottles anywhere. They really care about safety first, as we've talked to Tommy White about it, and they want to make sure that people are in a work environment that's clean, all the paint that's going up, everything they're doing. It was 5-star. Thanks to the Raiders again for having me out today. It was a day I won't forget. Pictures are up on Twitter at JT the Brick and on Facebook. So last night we were honored on behalf of the Golden Knights to host the show from Dan Duva's broadcast perch inside there, which was really fun. So We get in there, we do the show for 2 hours. You had on Tony Sanchez, George McPhee. We had a whole bunch of really good guests. Johnny Katz came in, Man About Town. So it was done. I sat with Vince Sapienza. Kevin Bollinger is going to join us next. Chris Matthews in the press box before I started walking around in between periods. And then I'm watching the game. I'm like, what's going on here? Why are they not into this? Stone scored the first goal, which the place erupted. Just what I expected. Vegas to get out to a good start and take the lead.
Turnover. Backhand. Score! Mark Stone! 33rd goal of the season for Mark Stone. Puts Vegas in the lead 1-0.
Come on, you got to win the game. You're up 1-0. Stone scored. Woke the place up. And then just the wheels started to come off. Arizona was playing because at that point in the game, early in the game, they were still alive mathematically. They needed to win out. They needed Colorado to lose, and they were playing like a desperate team.
Coyotes win a right circle draw. Point shot save. Rebound in front. Score! Lots of contact in front. Fleury was tied up. Coyotes, for the moment, have taken a 3-1 lead.
So they take a 3-1 lead, and I think at that point, everybody in the building knew. It was like, okay, this is over. Everybody got their gift as they walked in. Everybody was having fun. I was just like, everybody seemed to be checked out. Fans were having fun just enjoying the atmosphere, but it didn't look like the Vegas Golden Knights were completely locked in the game. They were going through the motions.
Still in play. Puck came out in front. Score! Knights with a giveaway in their own zone, and it's put through Fleury's pads and into the net. Connor Garland on the doorstep to put it through Fleury. 4-1 Arizona.
So Dan Duva on the call. So we don't have a hockey analyst on today who could explain what happened and how Fleury actually looked. Fleury was basically going, that was a preseason game last night. It was just, hey, it's a spring training game. We're going to get it back. Let's Kershaw pitch 2 innings and see that he's getting loose for the regular. It was just like Fleury, let's get him out there, make sure he's okay, look good. And the team didn't have any go to him in the second and third period, and they lose the game. So not the end of the world. They're stuck with their seating. They'll play San Jose as a road team, and we're going to have to live with this. But I've been concerned on this radio show for weeks now. I've been concerned for weeks about, will Fleury be sharp to start the postseason? And everybody's shushing me. Relax. He's a pro. Gary Lawless yesterday, he'll be ready. That's what he does. When you have 3 Stanley Cups and you're a future Hall of Famer, you'll be ready. We get it. But what about getting these goal scorers going? Stone, it was important he got a goal. But what about Marchessault? What about Carlson? What about Tuck? What about some of the guys who aren't scoring or we want to see get going? And I just thought last night would have been a nice night to have an easy victory against a team that was desperate, and that wasn't the case. So they'll play it out against the Kings, and we'll get ready for the postseason. And everybody's talking about San Jose. We have the advantage when it comes to the net with the goaltender. I think they have a better defense. They have a better defense than the Golden Knights, and the Golden Knights have better goal scorers. But if the goal scorers don't get hot, what is that going to say? I mean, you plan on winning these games against the Sharks 2-1? You could lose games 2-1, you know? You're not going to win everyone 2-1. Last year, it was incredible. All the tight games, all the easy victories, as we sat here every day going, wow, they don't play for another 7 days. Wow, they don't play for another 5 days. They had all the rest that they needed because they were burying people along the way. And it helped them on the road to the Stanley Cup. After the game last night, Gerard Gallant on Fleury coming back in between the pipes.
No, he was outstanding. It was good. He got lots of shots, lots of work. More than I liked him to get, but he looked really good and real sharp.
Yeah, he thought he looked sharp, and he's the coach. So if he's cool with that, I'm good with it. But the fact that they didn't want to play, for Gallant to say that and to talk about that in the postgame, you could tell that he was a bit ticked off.
The first period I had no issue with. I thought it was a competitive first period. And then after that, just look, we didn't want to play.
Yeah, didn't want to play. That's a lot for Gallant to say. I mean, Gallant's a former hockey player. He's a tough guy. For him to say they didn't want to play. So he's disappointed at this time, and he's going to have to lift the team up. They'll have the ability to do that with practice. They'll be able to do it with morning skates to build them up again.
Disappointing, but again, it's hard to get up for those games that are meaningless, and it meant a lot to that team over there. And like I said, I'm disappointed the way we played. But we'll get through it.
So how disappointed are you? I'm playing sound from Gerard Gallant. I want to hear from the season ticket holders who were there for the last regular season home game last night. Put a bow on this. What'd you think of the game? Is it nothing to be concerned about? Are you a little bit worried? Are you nervous? 876-1340. 876-1340. If you're a Golden Knights fan, what do you think happens next? Tell you one thing. They better win and better be good game one. Because if something happens game one and they lose 4-1 or they lose 5-2 and they dig a hole, it's going to take a lot for them to dig out of the hole in this series. This is a San Jose team that has this series circled. They don't like Vegas. They'll be ready to go. Gallant spoke to the media earlier today about trying to stay healthy the rest of the way, especially here coming up. Really important that they're healthy going forward. They don't pick up any injuries ahead of time here at practice coming into this Kings game. That's the key going forward for this team. Have them ready to go. Have the morale up for the team and be ready.
Go play a good game. Hopefully everybody stays healthy and we'll worry about, you know, Wednesday when it gets here, Thursday, whatever it's going to be. So hopefully just play a good, solid game.
Yeah, kind of nonchalant from here. Let's just play solid and get to the postseason. Talked about the fact that today, he said last night they didn't show up. He reiterated that today.
I thought last night's first period was good. It was, you know, lots of pace and a competitive game. And after that, we sort of fell asleep. It wasn't good in the second and third. It was our worst hockey of the year. And again, I wasn't happy about that. But I sort of expected it a little bit, to be honest with you. Because, like I said, I loved the first period. I thought it was two competitive teams. And then after that, we just didn't have our game at all.
And one more as we go down to the season being over. Hockey players are like that. It is a grind, man. It is a grind. It is a violent game. You get hurt, injuries all the time, mentally, physically. They just want this regular season to be behind them and peak at the right time.
I can't wait till tomorrow's game's over, you know. You got to play that game, and it's going to be, you know, try and get through the game and stay healthy and play a good, solid game and work hard. And then you get ready for the big thing on Wednesday or Thursday.
Can we all admit that the team isn't playing well going into the playoffs? Are we allowed to do that around here? Can someone do that and be accountable on this, that the team is not playing well heading into the postseason? Or maybe they're playing well, but they just don't feel motivated because nothing's going to change here. They know who the opponent is. They're just going through the motions. In sports, it's a nice perk to have when you can go through the motions. It's really nice when you clinch in the playoffs and you have meaningless games. Look at the Warriors. They had to beat Denver the other night. They hammered them. And now they're just playing out the schedule as they know they'll be the one seed. And then the Warriors, different because they're a dynasty than the Vegas Golden Knights. But the Warriors are trying to flip the switch. And they don't have to worry about their first round. Because in the NBA, it's 1 vs. 8. So even if it's Russell Westbrook, they should win that. In five games. They probably win the four games and lose one, and they're cool. They move on. And it's supposed to get tougher after that. But I wasn't impressed last night. I was impressed with everything behind the scenes and the entertainment and everything that's cool about T-Mobile, but I was not impressed with the product that they put out there last night. And we're trying to come up with a reason why. The final four. Auburn players are now ill. A couple of players on Auburn, if you're betting it, are a little bit ill. Not only have they lost their best player, Okiki suffered the torn ACL in the Sweet 16. He's their best on-ball defender, and they were able to rally and have a big game after his injury. But can they do it again? And their top scorers are under the weather. Bryce Brown and Jarrett Harper, Bruce Pearl said, are just flat-out sick. One has a cold and is hoarse. He couldn't speak with reporters. Brown's also sick. Both players received shots. And they've been getting hydration to try to get better for this. So Bruce Pearl made it clear, if the game was tonight, they'd probably be in a little bit of trouble. But the fact that they have another day for this, we'll see how that goes here. This will be interesting. And for Texas Tech, as we know that Chris Beard was supposed to be the head coach of UNLV until he bailed, they're good. They defend. They rebound. They do a lot of good things that teams are supposed to do. That is one hell of a basketball coach who's going to have that team ready to go. And then Michigan State, I think they have the star power. They have a veteran team, even though none of the players, except for one who didn't get in to their last Final Four, the last time they were there, Tom Izzo, this is his 10th Final Four. So Michigan State opened up a 3-point favorite against Texas Tech. It's now down to 2.5 at the Westgate, 2.5 William Hill, 3 at the MGM Mirage. Auburn, Virginia opened up a 5.5-point favorite. Now it's 6. And I think that has to do with the sickness and the flu bug and what's happening with this team here. Auburn has had the toughest schedule so far in the tournament. They've played the toughest road in the tournament, and they've won some really unique games on both offense and defense. I think Bruce Pearl has done a fabulous job having this team ready to play, but for the coach today at the press conference to say our guys are sick, what's that all about? I mean, keep it in-house. I mean, we know they're not feeling well. You don't have to get into it. He went on and on and on about how they're not playing well. Maybe he's just trying to He'll be coy about this. We'll see what happens. Total on the Auburn-Virginia game opened up at 130.5. It's now 131, 131.5. And the Texas Tech-Michigan State game opened at 132.5, and that's where it is right now. If you're betting the game, if you're betting the first half, especially teams hammering away at Virginia in the first half, if you like Auburn in the first half, where they've been exciting and up-tempo, and it takes Virginia about 5 minutes to 10 minutes to find their rhythm in every game here, a couple of sharps I talked to love Auburn in the first half of this game here. We'll see how that plays out. And then finally, baseball. Cody Bellinger with the 6 home runs. Bryce Harper off to a good start. We just talked to Hacksaw about baseball and Manny Machado and what's happening with the Padres. Bobby's Red Sox. I don't know how a team could open up, an East Coast team, open up in Seattle, Oakland, and then Arizona. I don't recall that ever. I'm sure it's happened before. As a Yankee fan, I don't remember the Yankees opening up in Seattle and then going to Oakland and then playing a interleague, National League team like the Padres for 3 or 4 games. What is that all about? The Red Sox are digging a hole the first week. And for those who say the first week doesn't matter a lot, well, it does, because these races are all going to come down to 2 or 3 games. The American League East is going to come down to the Yankees and the Red Sox, and they're going to be separated by 1 or 2 games going into the last week. April matters, and we're seeing it. But the stars have come out. Good to see Las Vegas's Bryce Harper playing at such a high level. Always excited to see that. When we come back from Fox 5, Kevin Bollinger will join us. He was there last night. We'll talk to him about the Vegas Golden Knights. He'll be traveling. He's going to San Jose. That's his next assignment. We'll get into that and wrap up the regular season at home for BGK with one more game to go. You went to the game last night. Hope you had a great time. Thanks to the Golden Knights for giving us access to T-Mobile last night and the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway, Henderson.
Breakout pass from Schmidt, a turnover. Keller right side, stops right circle, shoots, and a glove save, Fleury. Ole from Marc-Andre Fleury.
Nice to see Fleury out there last night. A big part of this team, clearly, and going forward. The best chance, I believe, to win. Kevin Bollinger, kind enough to join us at Kevin Fox 5 Vegas, the sports director at the Fox TV affiliate here in beautiful Las Vegas. Kevin, good to see you in the press box last night on a game that was a little bit bizarre. Fleury was out there. They got the early lead with the Stone goal, but looked pretty flat after that, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't really the best effort, I think. Gerard Gallant mentioned that even afterwards, but Arizona came in the desperate team. When the game started, they were still alive for a playoff spot. They had to win out and have Colorado lose out. During the second intermission, Colorado had already sewn up the playoff spot, and Arizona was eliminated. But by then, you know, it was already 3-1 at that point. And not maybe the best effort, but at the same time, that game really was more about making sure that Fleury got a bunch of work to get back into the groove, and making sure that everybody got out of there healthy without any injuries, and it was mission accomplished on both those.
What was it like covering Fleury post-game last night? I'm sure there was a sea of reporters there wanting to know how he felt mentally and physically.
Yeah, there was, and he spoke to the media for the first time on Wednesday. During that 2-week span that he was out, obviously he doesn't speak to the media, and he talked about the importance then, before the game, of getting out and being able, especially to kind of see shots through traffic, things that you don't see as much in practice. You can't really simulate that. And afterwards, it was the same thing, just trying to get a couple of different scenarios that you just don't see as much in practice. There was a breakaway last night, which is a good thing for him to get a look at as well. So I think, all things considered, I thought Fleury looked great. He gave up 4 goals, but I thought for the most part he looked pretty good last night.
Gerard Gallant, you've covered him all year, going back to last year. He's been chippy at times. I think he puts everything in perspective. He wanted to see a better effort. He said it on record today when he spoke to the media that he can't wait for the season to be over. So it looks like he's got his edge, and he's going to get on these guys, I would assume, with these morning skates and these practices and making sure that they listen to him and they're at their best going into San Jose. That's a tough team, and as you know, you'll be covering the team up in San Jose. Those fans are hostile. They want to knock Vegas out badly.
It's amazing how fast a rivalry and a heated, hated rivalry has developed between not only the two teams, but the two fan bases as well. It is going to be a raucous atmosphere at the SAP Center in San Jose. They do not like the Vegas Golden Knights at all. They don't like the fans, and they took some shots at the Golden Knights with their rally towels last year during the playoffs. Some people might remember that storyline. And then, you know, in terms of the teams, things have heated up a little bit. These two games that they played late in the regular season were very chippy and physical. And I think that the Sharks know that they need to kind of throw Vegas off their game a little bit to have their chance, because on paper, it's a very even series. The one advantage the Golden Knights certainly have is Marc-Andre Fleury over Martin Jones. The Golden Knights have owned Martin Jones throughout the last 2 years, and that's where the Golden Knights certainly have the edge. But San Jose sees this as their window is closing. This might be it for them. I mean, you look at Brett Burns is 34 years old. Jumbo Joe is 38. Pavelski's getting up there, and more than likely they're going to have a hard time keeping Erik Karlsson. So this might be the last hurrah for this group of Sharks, and they know that.
Kevin Bollingen joins us, Fox 5. I'm concerned about it because just what you said. It is their last chance together. They're really strong defensively. Their point men on defense can score. They have experience in this league and in the postseason, and they should have had a cup by now. I think they're going to be all in for this series, and it's going to be a tough matchup. Let's move on to UNLV football. We'll be out there, obviously, at the spring game. What are your expectations? You know Tony Sanchez here, and I don't want to say he's running out of time, because I think he could be here forever if this team starts winning, especially with the new stadium coming online here. But no one wants to hear about this team losing to inferior teams anymore. They've got to win those winnable games on the schedule and become bowl eligible.
And I think if you look at the schedule, the swing game is going to be the home game against Arkansas State in the non-conference part, and that'll give us a good gauge of where this team is. They lost at Arkansas State last year, but that team graduated a lot of players, including their star quarterback. That is going to be the game, I think, that kind of puts UNLV into a push towards a bowl game or not. I know it's early in the season, but that really has to be a must-win, especially when you have to go to Northwestern, to Vanderbilt. You need to get a split in your non-conference going into the Mountain West portion of the schedule. And, you know, it's a must. You hate to put the must-win label when we're so far away from the season, but if you look at the schedule, that is certainly the one that's the must-win.
You know, Kevin, I look at Tony Sanchez and what he's trying to do. I believe in his message and the type of recruiting he's doing, and he's loading up on defense. He has better athletes, especially at the linebacker position. They've been able to run it the last couple of years because they had a great featured back. But it still comes down to the quarterback and his ability to take his skills, Rodgers, to the next level. Because I talked about it with Tony yesterday before I saw you, and he's got a gifted, unique, super athlete at quarterback, and I think he's got to run him harder. He's got to demand more out of him. He's got to put the pressure on him, and he's got to deliver. How do you think he's going to handle that pressure?
I think they need to open the playbook up a little bit more.
Sure.
I thought they were way too conservative when Armani Rodgers was in there. Obviously, Armani Rodgers has to stay healthy for them to have a chance at success, because there is a big drop-off between Armani Rodgers and the two guys that are battling for the backup position in terms of their skill set. Kenyon Oblad has the potential to be a great quarterback, but he's a redshirt freshman. Only took a couple of snaps late in the season last year. But when Armani Rodgers is healthy in there, I would like to see them take some more shots and open things up. The one thing that I think they fell in love with was the quarterback draw far too often on not only on short yardage situations, but we were seeing it on third and four and third and five sometimes. And not only does that beat your quarterback up a little bit more, But it became almost predictable when it got into a third and one and fourth and one exactly what they were going to do, and teams just keyed on it, and they weren't as successful as they should have been in those conversions.
Kevin Bollinger, Fox 5, as we wrap it up. You've been to the Las Vegas ballpark. I've walked around it. I had to do the show during media day. I missed it. Tell us about it. I'm thrilled. It's in my neighborhood. I'm looking forward to going to a lot of games. I think it's going to bring the community together, and it's the jewel of minor league baseball, fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, when the Aviators came in, and this is a AAA roster that has several guys with big league experience, and the media day was their first day in the park as well, and their jaws dropped to the floor, not just with the playing facility itself, but all the amenities that they have put into this park underneath, the things that Cashman Field was lacking that the major league teams want in terms of the development of their players. It is all first class. A couple of the Aviator players and the manager said that it is comparable to a major league facility in terms of everything that they have, just without the seating capacity. And from a fan standpoint, it's going to be set up perfectly. You just think of those summer nights out there. It's a beautiful ballpark. It's wide open in terms of when you go out to get concessions. They have TVs out there. If there's, you know, another game that you're interested in, at the major league level, minus the Dodgers, of course, because they couldn't show that in the city.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll be able to kind of get the entire experience. And I know one complaint that a lot of fans had, it sounds like a small thing, there's no more metal bleachers out there, and it gets so hot here that it was uncomfortable for a lot of people. Everybody's got a seat out there, that mesh seating that's going to be a little bit cooler. A lot of things done with the fan in mind to give them the best experience possible.
The mesh seats. My son got a job out there. It had nothing to do with me. Went out there on his own, and he's going to be working out there before he goes off to college, and I can't wait. I love baseball. I was never a minor league guy. Growing up in New York, we didn't have minor league baseball, the Yankees, going to the big stadium and all that. But now at the stage of my life, and especially being able to go over there and the connection to downtown Summerlin and what it could be like, as long as everybody's comfortable in the ballpark on those nights where it's 111, 112 degrees and the day games like that, and it seems like they have that covered, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything seemed, they had the pool out there, but that's more for groups. But even just the ingress and egress of parking and traffic, it has been addressed. There's a couple of entrances off of Town Center. You got entrances off of Sahara. You got the entrances over by downtown Summerlin. Lots of places for people to get in and get out, so it's not going to be any type of a bog of traffic. And then once you're in the stadium, they've upgraded the food options for people to really make it a true night out where you can do a little bit of everything, enjoy the game. If you want to continue on the night, there's plenty of restaurants and bars right there at downtown Summerlin. And the Red Rock, of course, is right there next door as well. So really a fantastic setup, going to be the best in minor league baseball in terms of facilities. And hopefully people take advantage of that and don't take for granted that we're just stacking up some beautiful facilities between the Raiders' new stadium and the Aviators' new stadium out here, and T-Mobile Arena, of course, world-class as well. Vegas has got the best of everything.
We'll talk to you when you get back from San Jose. I'm sure I'll see you before that. Thanks for making time for us.
All right, thank you, JT.
Kevin Bollinger, Fox 5. As we have the newsmen and newswomen on, Bobby, we got to put together an open for that because we have Chris Matthews. We're going to talk to Amber. We have, I love having Vince Sapienza on and Kevin to find out what's happening here locally in town, because I like this show to be more national than local. We're going to cover the local stories like the Aviators and what's happening with UNLV, but the biggest stories that hit with the Golden Knights and the Raiders and the big national breaking news stories, we're going to be talking about that. Schmitty, if you're a boxing fan, stick around. And we know how to make boxing entertaining. Schmitty's one of the best. He's the MC for the International Boxing Hall of Fame. We're going to talk about the schedule coming up, what's coming to Vegas, and who's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. It's a Friday night in Vegas. Good to be here.
Well, folks, time to call the night. Drink up, the world's about to end.
Time now for the nightcap.
Well, last orders, please.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So till next time.
Good night, everybody.
With a look ahead to tonight's action, here's JT the Brick.
Nightcap? I was out late last night, the grand opening of the Palms, Chaos. That was a late night for me and my wife. What a good time. You can only do that in Vegas. What I love about Vegas is we bring in Schmitty, one of the best boxing analysts out there. Schmitty, you've been in Vegas a long time and your roots in Miami. Vegas is great because there is no curfew. They don't throw you out at 1:45 like they do in California. You can stay out and have a good time, right?
Especially if you're single. But I guess you can do it if you're married as well. Yeah, you know, when I used to come back in the day, I first started coming to Vegas in the late 80s covering boxing with Showtime and Don King even back in the day, and there just was no clock. I was still living in Florida at the time, and it would take me about 2 weeks to recover when I would get back to Florida because Vegas is something kind of unique, no doubt about it.
In this corner, the TV show, InThisCornerTV.com, 15 years now. Congratulations on such a long run. Tremendous.
Yeah, it's not, as you know, it's not easy to get a show on, let alone keep it on. But I really give all the credit to God and to my guests. I mean, the guests that I've had on throughout the years, along with, of course, you know, John Hyatt producing.
Yes.
But the guests that I've had that have shared the squared circle or let me share the squared circle with them during the course of that time, you know, 55 of the world champions, we've interviewed so many more than that, but 55 of them have let me go inside the ring with them and demonstrate their skills that have made all of them champions and many of them living legends. So when I do these fights now as a commentator and I meet these young prize fighters and they come up to me and they bring up my in-ring with Floyd or with Manny or with Tyson or Holyfield or Pacquiao, it really makes me feel good. So, yeah, we celebrated our 15th year. And still going strong. And as soon as my next heals, I have some more in-rings slated. Maybe even one with Tyson Fury, but it's going to be really difficult to do that one because I'm going to have to get on a ladder or I'm really going to hurt my neck looking up.
Schmitty's our guest. Let's talk. I had Barry Tompkins on last night, and he agreed with me that promoters are keeping us away from great fights. I'm just shocked when promoters do everything to keep us away from a great fight. And it could be, you know, Anthony Joshua or Deontay Wilder. It could be Canelo and Oscar hiding him for years. It was Floyd not wanting to fight Manny until Manny aged out and all of that. Are we still going to go through that? Do you think promoters are coming together more, or has never been more divisive between them?
Well, it's up to the fans and to come out and say things. Like, for example, we just had Mikey Garcia, mm-hmm. one of the top fighters, take on Errol Spence in a fight. I totally knew the outcome. I knew exactly what was going to happen, except whether it would be stopped or go to the distance, because Mikey Garcia should have been fighting Vasyl Lomachenko, somebody his size, another one of the best fighters on the planet. But we had Garcia take on a guy that was too big for him in Errol Spence, because that was the fight that could be made. And although, you know, I know people enjoy the evening and watching, it wasn't a competitive fight. What makes the sweet science sweet and special are the greatest fighters in the world, basically the same size, evenly matched and coming together. And you're right, the politics of boxing still get in the way and still interfere with that. And I got to tell you something, HBO for now has gone away. We've got all these other platforms, you know, DAZN, ESPN+, Plus, Showtime is obviously still in the game. UFC Fight Pass that I'm doing boxing for now. You damn well better have competitive matchups, or you won't get the subscriptions, you won't get the buyers, you won't get the viewers. And, you know, and it's also, by the way, up to the fighters to demand that they fight the best.
Schmitty joins us, James Schmitty Smith, phenomenal boxing analyst, on the call, everything he does in thiscornertv.com. I want to go to a couple of weight classes and start off with lightweights of 135. Lomachenko, a lot of people think that he is the best fighter in the world. Do you agree?
No, I think he's a phenomenal boxer. He's almost like a throwback to, you know, Willie Pep or something like that. But I don't think that he's the best. You know, my number one pound-for-pound fighter who will be in action in a couple weeks is Bud Crawford. Terrence Crawford is my number one guy, welterweight champion, 34-0. I do think Lomo's right up there. In fact, if you just do the whole top 10, you could do it. But really, the guys that really stand out right now, JT, are Crawford, Spence, Lomachenko, Oleksandr Usyk, the cruiserweight champion from Ukraine, who's unbelievable. Yeah. And then you can put in some of the heavyweights and some of the other guys I could name. They're all kind of... But who really stands out? Oh, and of course, Triple G and Canelo. But really, Crawford and Spence and Lomachenko and Usyk, to me, are the four that step out above everybody overall with their pugilistic skills.
Yeah, Schmitty joins us. Welterweights, to have Crawford, Errol Spence, Thurman, Porter, and to see what's happening in that division is spectacular. But I want to go to Daniel Jacobs and Canelo and talk about the middleweights overall. How long of a run do you think Canelo is going to have? How is he being protected? I mean, is he going to have one big fight every year and one tomato can fight? Does he have to fight the best of the best now, or is he just on cruise control? Walk me through Canelo.
Well, I think he's 28 years old, but let's not forget that he started, you know, fighting professionally way back in the day. I think 2005 or something like when he made his debut. He's had over 50 fights. He's had coming off two tough ones with Triple G. One thing I will say about Canelo, and by the way, I picked him to lose and thought that he lost both of the fights to Triple G, although the second one was razor close. He still improves. He's improved on his defense. But I don't think he will have a really long run because he started so young. Who knows what he does? You know, he's been accused of some things. He's tested positive for some things. And I'm going to tell you something. May the 4th right here at T-Mobile, that is not an easy fight. Danny Jacobs is a big, athletic dude. Canelo's a better fighter. Jacobs is more athletic and large. And you know how that matters with rehydration and all of that stuff. We'll get to that fight, I know, as it gets closer. But to answer your question, no, I think he's got maybe 3 years left at the top. Maybe.
Schmitty, as we wrap it up, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury. For our listeners who love boxing, we're going to do boxing every week on a rotation with Al Bernstein, Schmitty, Kevin Ioli, the best of the best. Joshua, to me, is so athletic and so gifted. He reminds me of a tight end in the NFL, a power forward in basketball. I love everything about him, but I don't get a chance to see him fight. He told me on the radio a couple of weeks ago he's excited about fighting in New York. He wants more fights here in the States because more people will recognize him. He's a big name in Europe and overseas, and especially in London. Are we going to see him fighting here in the States more?
I think so. I think the demand for those three guys, for Deontay, for Fury, for and then what they need to think about is the damn 70s. Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, George Foreman, Kenny Norton. What the money that they could make in fighting each other and creating excitement, because still, if you have the heavyweight division on top, then you got boxing on top. I think Joshua is the best in that. He has the one thing over the other guys is that great, great amateur pedigree, which gives him a tiny little edge, although with those three, flip a coin. But if we can say that, flip a coin, and they're all heavyweights, if they would just rotate and meet each other two or three times, that would be so damn good for boxing. And I think with those three guys, we might see it happen. I hope so.
Thank you, Schmitty. Good to talk to you. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Thanks, man. Good talking
to
you.
James Schmitty Smith, our boxing analyst, one that we will have because we're going to talk boxing. We're not going to forget about sports because that's what's happening now, Bobby, in the world that we're in. People forget about sports. They forget about boxing until a fight comes around. We know we got a lot of fight fans that are here, no doubt about that. So before we get out of here, I don't like to go 2 hours without talking to anybody, especially a hockey fan. If you got an opinion on what happened, we had four great guests here. We haven't heard from a Golden Knight fan unless I'm giving away tickets. 876-1340. My head's in a good space this weekend. Little tired from Marshmallow last night. Bobby's telling me to chill out. 876-1340. It's been a great week. But I am concerned about VGK because I know that flipping a switch in hockey is tough to do. I know it's tough to do because it's too physical, it's too demanding. And I think this team, we're all expecting in this town for them just to flip that switch, Flurry's there, everything's going to be great. Not so fast, my friend, because of what's waiting in San Jose. What's waiting in San Jose is an angry, wounded, because they have some injuries, wounded animal, tiger, lion, whatever you want to say, and they are ready for this. They are a one and done, let's knock Vegas out of here, and then we'll break up and go fishing in Cabo and go do our thing. That's what they want to do. They want to knock Vegas out. They want to knock Vegas out of this and move on. 876-1340, and are you concerned about San Jose? I can tell you this. You got to get a win in San Jose. Have to. You go down 0-2, I don't believe this team's going to win 4 out of 5. You got to win 4 out of 5 after that. The percentages are insane in hockey to do that. But we get used to in hockey where teams get buried in. We remember these dramatic comebacks. Do we remember that in the first round last year, first round, that the Capitals were down 3-1 and made a goalie change and won the Stanley Cup? How nice would it have been for Ovechkin and the Capitals to have been knocked out so Vegas didn't have to see them in the Stanley Cup final where they were rolling? And we had them down 1-0 in that series, and they won 4 in a row. Big NFL signing that went down today for the Dallas Cowboys. I know there are a ton of Cowboy fans in Vegas. And if you look at this team, Jerry Jones pays when he has the player, doesn't he? A 5-year, $105 million deal with defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence. $65 million guaranteed. So he had the franchise tag on him before free agency started. It would have guaranteed him $20.5 million, but the idea was to use it and to lock him up long-term, and they were able to pull that off. So that's a big deal. That's one of the best defensive players in all of football. I put him at a level with Khalil Mack, who the Raiders had as he ended up going on to Chicago. He's that good of a player. Brian, thanks for holding and getting in here. What do you got, Brian? We're wrapping up the week.
You know what? On the Vegas Golden Knights, you're right. I agree with everything you just said, but I keep coming back to the same thing. This team gets up for big games. It's remarkable how they do it. They can lose to some of the lower powers, and then they come up on a big game, and they just seem to get up for it. I am not nervous about this San Jose series.
How could you not be nervous, dude? How could you not be nervous of a San Jose team that's been really good for 10 years and haven't been able to bust through, and they hate us, and they match up, and they have Carlson and Burns and Thornton, and they got guys who are physical. They're going to want to fight. They're going to want to drop the gloves, and you're not even concerned?
In some respects, you're absolutely right. I am concerned. Let me rephrase.
Okay, there you go.
But as far as the win-loss percentage, I'm not that concerned. Their goaltending is atrocious.
It is. It is.
It is absolutely atrocious. And we can capitalize on that.
Hey, we haven't had a goalie play here in 2 weeks. In
that's
Fleury,
true.
Okay? So he just got out and he got beat 4-1. So I think Fleury, I have no problem with him. I'll flip the switch. But around the NHL world, we're accustomed to Fleury coming back and just playing at a very high level. Now, all the pucks are now on the side of Fleury. He has to play great, not good. I don't think you get by San Jose unless Fleury stands on his head.
Game one's going to be the tail, brother. That's going to tell the whole story right there.
Thanks for checking in. Appreciate it. Yeah, game one's big, especially when you're the home team. You know, you're the road team and you lose game one, you're fine. You better get game two. You got to get game two. And I think that's what's going to be really unique about this. Because that playing up there, even though it's San Jose and it's Silicon Valley, it's not. I've been in that building. That place rocks. It's probably very similar to the Fortress, but we just have many more bells and whistles with the show and the Cirque du Soleil performance and everything that goes on. How about the video last night? They keep showing it with Foley, the owner, and the helicopter, and it's just great what they do. It's just fantastic, the music and everything that's going on there. Love that. Again, if you're joining us late, I went out to the Raiders Stadium site today. I posted the pictures on Twitter at JT the Brick and on Facebook. Really fun to see it. Thanks to Tom Blanda and the Raider team that invited me out there today. It's that fantastic. Seth Roberts, who was cut yesterday, signs with the Ravens. So remember, Michael Crabtree went to the Ravens. Seth Roberts goes there now. That is a big deal. Hey, how about this for our first week of two-hour shows? This is who we had. We had Mark Anderson, Chris Matthews, Shane Knighty, Jeff Sherman, Zig Ficasse, James Harris, the former Raider, Joe Lisi, Lee Sterling, Russell Baxter, Steph McKenzie. Yesterday, Gary Lawless, Nick Holden, the defenseman, George McPhee, the GM, Tony Sanchez, the head coach of the Rebels, the legendary boxing broadcaster Barry Tompkins, Johnny Katz, and Dan Duva. And then today, Michael Gelkin, Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, Kevin Bollinger, and James Smitty Smith. Way to go, Bobby. Way to put that together. Phenomenal producing job. I'll put that up there with anybody here. Fantastic job. So, spring games tomorrow. I've not been out there before. I've never been to a spring game on campus at UNLV. Looking forward to that experience. I hope everybody goes out there and supports Tony Sanchez and this team. It's a good time to do it. And then next week, it's all about the draft for us. We are 5 days draft insiders every day. As the Raiders, April 25th, 3 first-round picks, we will give you in-depth team Raiders coverage on the upcoming draft. Excited about that. Thanks to the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway in Henderson, Crivetti Orthopedics, Dr. Mike Crivetti, Grimaldi's, the best pizza I've ever had, not just in town, ever the best pizza I've ever had, and our great friends from Golden Entertainment. Go check out Boulevard in Maine, the new great tap house right there inside the Strat. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you out at UNLV tomorrow.